morning.
May it please the court, Doug Burden for Appellant Safari Club International. With me at council table is Hannah Seidman. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This case is about approval of a settlement that the federal defendant has called historic, involving the fundamental reordering of their ESA listing program. Despite the magnitude of this case, the federal government strongly opposed Safari Club getting involved in the case to even comment on this historic settlement, even though they know that the district court should have considered the legality, the reasonableness, and the public interest underlying this historic settlement. Now, the key legal issue, both for terms of intervention and approval of the settlement, is whether the service could, through these settlements, set up a procedure in which they would no longer, for the species on the 2010 candidate notice to review and 9 other species, no longer even consider making a warranted but precluded finding. Now, our briefs address this legal issue in detail, so I wanted to suggest a different way of looking at it. Could the service have adopted a regulation that said, from here on out, we're not even going to consider making a warranted but precluded finding for any species in the future?
If they justified it, they might be able to.
I think it would be contrary to the ESA, which gives them.
Does the ESA require them to?
It requires them to consider all 3 options that are statutorily provided. It doesn't require them to make any particular finding.
Well, let's go to the heart of what your argument. What is the procedural right that you seek to exercise that you think you are being denied?
It's several things. It's to have the service consider all of these options, these statutory options.
No. That's not the way we do this. That's like someone walking in off the street and saying, I want the agency to comply with law. We're talking about a standing question.
Right.
So what is the concrete interest that you seek to protect through some procedural device that you think has been bypassed?
There's 2 things. First, Safari Club's interest in the conservation of species, all kinds of conservation that would...
What procedural right do you think was designed to protect that interest?
The rulemaking procedures dictated in the ESA, where at the 12-month finding that we're talking about, the service has 3 options: not warranted, warranted but precluded, or to propose a rule.
Once those you're in the precluded category, that is subject to judicial review. And a party withstanding can come in and challenge that determination, which is what's essentially going on here. And which means that the precluded category can be put into contest, subject to judicial review. There are only 2 things that are subject to judicial review under the statute. They have essentially done that. They've come in and said, these species that are in the precluded category shouldn't be in the precluded category anymore. And that becomes a judicial issue, and they can settle. And they did settle. Or they can take it all the way through and have a determination. I don't know what procedural interest you think you have to somehow block that right of judicial review, which the statute clearly gives.
Well, the settlement sets up, it's what the settlement agreements approved by the district court sets up a procedure where in the future for hundreds of decisions that are not...
With respect to the matters in dispute in the litigation.
Not in the underlying cases before Judge Sullivan. Those cases only involved listing deadlines under the ESA where the service was supposed to make a decision by a particular point in time. They failed to do so, and the plaintiffs sued to enforce those missed deadlines. Not a single case before Judge Sullivan involved a 12-month finding that led to a warranted but precluded determination.
Let me see if I can help focus your attention a little bit. You keep talking about the warranted but precluded finding, right?
Yes.
Okay, but just to pursue Judge Edwards' questions a little bit and focus on standing, you have to show that that listing is somehow designed to protect your interests. And I didn't find anything in your briefs that said that. Look, it looks to me like the Ninth Circuit is correct about that the warranted but precluded finding is a device designed for the service's protection, not yours. Do you disagree with that?
I do disagree with that.
That's what you need to convince us about. Because
let me just add to that question so that you can give us both the answer. Because I couldn't find it in your opening briefs. And in your reply brief, it looked like you were trying hard, having been pushed, you were trying hard to land on something, and a page and a half, you suggested vaguely that you had a right to comment. And that was the interest that was lost. Well, the agency regulations in 424.15 say just the opposite. You don't have a right to comment. They don't have to give notice and comment in this category. They have to give it on the listing. And that's part of what they said to you. If and when they get to the listing, you will have an opportunity to weigh in, but you have no procedural interest to pursue at this point under their regulations.
But when they, in the candidate species, when they find a species warranted but precluded, they announce it in the CNOR and they ask for public comment.
They don't have to. Agencies can do anything they want to do with respect to matters like that. The question is whether you can assert an interest here, a procedural interest, and I can't find it. And I can find just the opposite in 424.15, which says you don't have this interest. They make it very clear that none of the substantive or procedural provisions apply to what you're talking about. That's in the regs.
But they provide that procedure, and there's
it doesn't mean that it's guaranteed. It doesn't mean that you can rest on it. They may sometimes ask for any of a number of things. It doesn't mean that you have standing to assert anything.
But and the statute talks about the rulemaking procedures of 553 applying not to the emergency determinations, but to other determinations.
Yeah, I know, but not to these kinds of determinations, not on the precluded determination. I think that's very clear. I mean, I've made myself try and go through this statute and these regs. They don't apply to this, and I think for obvious reasons that at the point in which something serious happens, like they decide to list or not, you have an opportunity to get notice, you have an opportunity to respond.
Well, that means this abdication of their authority for these 251 future decisions to at least consider. That's all we're talking about, is they should consider whether it's warranted but precluded. It escapes review because I can't challenge that effectively at the end of the process because they will already have expended all the resources that the warranted but precluded finding encourage them to put at another species that has a higher priority.
As I understand the statute, you have a right to challenge if they make a determination to put something in the precluded category. You don't have a right now.
But we don't want to challenge that decision.
I know. So you have no statutory right to seek judicial review. That's precisely the point. You have a right to seek judicial review if they put it there and you want to object to it, and you have a right to challenge a listing if and when they do the listing. This is otherwise, you know, it's almost analogous to no law to apply. I mean, that's another way, as a judge, I'm looking at it. There's no law for us to apply if they decide it's in or out of precluded. That's another way to try and grapple with the standing issue. There's nothing here.
Well, what's here is the agency giving up a statutory authority. They're not even going to consider it.
No, but they're absolutely right when they say they're not giving it up. They're exercising that authority. I know you blew it off. I read your brief very carefully, and you were disdainful of that and saying that's ridiculous. But it's not ridiculous. They have exercised their given authority to move away from precluded. They clearly have the discretionary authority to put it in or out of precluded.
In 2011, they decided over the next 5 years for 251 species. We know now that the science and the facts and the other listing priorities are going to be such that we're not going to find that species is warranted but precluded.
They're saying they're moving out of this category. Yeah, they're going to do that. They have that discretionary option to do it.
Well, Congress told them consider these three options.
They have considered it.
They've considered it in 2011 about
this. No, they've made the determination. A party that had the right to sue under the statute sued with respect to the precluded category. They had a right to sue. And the agency said, okay, in settlement of this suit, here's the timetable we're going to follow.
Well, please look back at the lawsuits that were filed in front that were before Judge Sullivan, because none of them had anything to do with precluded.
See, I think I think you're right that Congress required this precluded finding to be made, but as I said before, I think you have to convince us that procedure is designed to protect your interests for you to have Article III procedural standing. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Well, so then how is that finding intended to benefit your client as opposed to the agency, which is what both Congress and the Ninth Circuit said about it?
Well, that finding, it focuses...
You understand my question, right?
I'm sorry?
You understand my question.
Yeah. That finding focuses the resources of the agency on other species, and it encourages conservation of the species that are warranted but precluded, because stakeholders like my client, they want to avoid that listing because they prefer that the species remains under state jurisdiction and management, and conservation efforts, including sustainable use conservation or hunting, which we support and believe in, will work to avoid that listing of the species. And that's what we want to have the ability to comment when the greater sage-grouse comes up for listing, to say that the threats to this species aren't as bad as you think. There's all these conservation efforts out there about the greater sage-grouse, and at this time you should exercise your authority to find that it's warranted but precluded, like you've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years.
Or it could simply find that the requirements for listing are not met because of the arguments you make. I mean, that's a merits argument you can bring up at that time.
It's certainly possible, and we probably would argue that. But the procedural standing doctrine, if it applies, relaxes some of the standing requirements. And that's what we're asking for, just like it does for the plaintiffs in these underlying deadline cases. That's what they're relying on. That's what we're asking the court to allow us to rely on.
All right. Do you want to let us hear from Appley?
Good morning, Your Honors. Nicholas Masio on behalf of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. And with me at council table are Jay Touchton on behalf of the plaintiff, Wild Earth Guardians, and Amy Atwood on behalf of the plaintiff, Center for Biological Diversity. And may it please the court. Safari Club lacks standing to intervene in this case for either of the reasons that were raised by Judge Edwards and Judge Tatel. First, because the procedure that Safari Club says is being violated with respect to the warranted but precluded provision simply does not exist. And second, because Safari Club cannot rely on any supposed procedural violation of the warranted but precluded provision, because that Congress did not design that provision to protect Safari Club's interest in delay, but rather as a relief valve for the benefit of the service in light of its limited resources.
What did you mean the procedure does not exist?
What I mean that the procedure does not exist is that if you look at the warranted but precluded provision, that's section 4B3B of the Endangered Species Act, mm-hmm. that provision gives the service the authority but not the duty to find preclusion. Now, Congress could have said that...
Well, it exists. It's one of the options Congress said the agency would have.
That's correct. It's an option. It gives the service the authority to make that preclusion finding. What Congress could have said is that before proposing a listing rule for a particular species, it must make a finding on preclusion. But Congress did not say that in the statute. It simply said, make one of the following findings. And given that structure, the provision cannot be construed to require a finding on preclusion before the service makes a warranted finding. In fact, just the opposite is true, because Congress specifically precluded judicial review of the service's warranted findings. And so what that means is that if the service were to issue a warranted finding and a proposed listing rule for a species, no one can come into court to block the issuance of that proposed rule on the basis that the service should have allocated its resources to some other species. Now, one of the things that Safari Club complains about here is being denied the opportunity to comment before the service issues a proposed listing rule, but the fact is that the Endangered Species Act does not give Safari Club a right to comment at that stage.
Am I right that that's what your regulation says?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yeah. But even more importantly, the statute itself, Section 4B5 of the Endangered Species Act, requires notice and comment only after the service issues a proposed listing rule. And so should the service propose to list any of the three species that Safari Club is concerned about here, it will have a full opportunity to provide the service with comment on whether or not to list those species. But the statute simply does not give it a right to comment on whether to propose that listing rule in the first place.
Let me ask you, are they, if I'm hearing them correctly, I couldn't figure this out from your papers, the party's papers. In the underlying suits involve only species that had been proposed to be considered, or did they involve species that already had been designated, warranted, but precluded, or both?
The underlying multi-district litigation that was before the district court only involved species that the plaintiffs had petitioned to list. They did not involve candidate species on the candidate list. However, via these settlement agreements, the plaintiffs did agree to dismiss six additional suits that addressed those candidate species.
So the settlement is broader than the complaints?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's an interesting question for me. It occurred to me, did the original parties have standing to pursue that?
Well, Your Honor, that would be an open question, but that would go to the merits of these consent decrees.
Oh, and I'm asking you, do they have standing?
Did they have standing?
In other words, would it change your analysis on the standing question?
I don't believe so. No, what we're talking about is Safari Club's
No. This is where we kiddingly tell you advocates, go with the hypothetical, please.
Your Honor, I don't have a position on whether or not.
Well, think about it a second.
Because they raised it in their briefs, you know, in saying that the settlement is broader than the underlying suit.
Sure. And
So, in coming up with your response.
Do the complainants have?
The answer to your question.
As we think about this, because I have tried to think about this, would they have standing to come in? And their complaint was only about those cases in a precluded category. That's all their complaint was about. There are cases sitting in the precluded category and we want to move. Would they have standing?
I think they potentially could assert standing to challenge warranted but precluded findings. Yes, Your Honor.
Based on what?
Based on their interest in the species at issue, you know, whether their members are interested in conserving those species and et cetera, based on the facts of their plaintiffs, of their members' situations.
So your position is that even if there is some merit to the argument that the settlement is broader than the issues that were actually before the district court in the consolidated cases, Safari doesn't have jurisdiction anyway.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, I know their brief focuses on this one procedure, but they do make this other argument.
Right. The way I understand that argument is it goes to
the merits
of the consent decree. Yeah.
But it could shift a little bit how we address the question of whether they have standing.
I would have thought your answer would have been what I was suggesting, that is that a party has a right to challenge a precluded determination under the statute.
That is absolutely correct.
Well, you didn't say that.
Well, perhaps I'm not understanding your question correctly.
Well, you're understanding it. You're just thrown by having to answer it. That's all. You absolutely understand what we're asking you.
Your Honor, a plaintiff certainly would have the right to challenge a positive warranted but precluded finding. But the issue here is that you cannot challenge the service's decision not to invoke that.
But we try very hard to be responsible and think about what we're about to do so that we don't mess up the law for later cases.
Sure.
And so conceptually, we're trying to figure out, do the plaintiffs in the underlying cases have standing to do what they're doing? I think they clearly have a right of review under the statute because if they were only going after precluded. But the question here is they're not going after the precluded. They're going after cases that were not in the precluded category.
That's correct.
All right, so,
you know, on this issue of jurisdiction, our position is that there's no requirement that the district court have jurisdiction over every claim that was resolved by these consent decrees. That's going to the merits. That's what the Supreme Court said in Firefighters, was basically that the district court may provide broader relief than the court could have awarded on the original complaint. So even if this were an issue, it's not.
In the context of, you know, the complaint says and such other relief as is appropriate, sort of thing. This is a little different challenge, it seems to me. Let me ask you, as the 251 species, are all of those at issue in the cases that were before the district court?
Not in this particular multi-district litigation,
yeah.
No. But there were additional five or six additional suits that those species were at issue.
Right.
And I would like to take a minute.
So the service came to the court or to the plaintiffs and basically said, we're going to agree with you as to your suit, but we're going to take it a step further.
Right, and the reason for that was because in order to set a schedule to clear out this backlog of existing candidate species, these are all subject to the same listing budget. And so necessarily, for the service to accomplish its purposes, which is to clear out this backlog of candidate species, it needed to address this issue in a comprehensive manner. And so that's why this agreement doesn't just address new petitions, but also existing candidate species.
So 251 is the total universe.
As of 2010, the total universe of candidate species.
Candidates, not the new.
Not the new
that were
petitions.
That were the subject of the underlying complaints.
That's correct. In this particular multi-district litigation.
Right. So what they're really focusing on is they're saying, I don't know what they're saying about the candidate group, because I think they're hard pressed there. But what they're saying is, their focus is on these are new species. Someone comes in and wants you to address them, and they are saying you have no authority to avoid one of the three things as a matter of discretion that Congress said you must consider.
Right, and what we're saying is that there's no duty to make a finding on preclusion before issuing a proposed listing rule, so this supposed procedure can't be found on the face of the statute.
So if Congress cuts the service's budget in half, they still wouldn't need to invoke this warranted but precluded?
Well, the service's budget for listing is one of the assumptions that underlies these agreements, and there are paragraphs in the agreements that apply to modification if, in the event that there was some kind of budget cut, they would be able to apply for modification. Your Honors, I see that I'm out of my time here.
Anything you need to say, that because we've taken up your time with a lot of questions I know that you don't think are relevant, but are troubling to us nonetheless.
It's the first time he's appeared before us, I think.
That's correct. I would like to take just a moment to address Judge Tatel's question, which just for a very brief second. You know, Safari Club makes this assertion that somehow the warranted but precluded provision was designed to allow states or private parties to implement private conservation measures that may end up avoiding the need to list a species. That was manifestly not what Congress said it was enacting the warranted but precluded provision for. If you look at the conference report for the bill that enacted this provision, it specifically says that Congress did not intend the service to delay proposing listing rules, quote, for any reason other than the existence of pending proposals to list other species subject to a greater degree of threat would make allocation of resources to the existing, to the petition at issue unwise. And so our position is that Congress enacted this provision as a relief valve for the benefit of the service in light of its resources, and intended the service to issue proposed listing rules as promptly as possible as it could in light of its limited budget.
I have just one question. You may think this is another irrelevant question given our case law, but why do we require an intervener to have standing? I mean, we've got a case or controversy here. We have a constitutional case or controversy, correct?
Yes.
So I mean, and other circuits don't do this, correct?
Well, that's what, correct.
Does this, why do we do this? Does this really make any sense?
The reasoning, I think, is because the reason a party attempts to intervene in a case is to gain party status in the case so that if there's ultimately a need to appeal, they can appeal. And obviously, in order to invoke the court's Article III jurisdiction, they need to have standing. So I think the reason why is because to give a party status as opposed to amicus status, they need to show, at least if they're going to be on the plaintiff's side, they need to show how they're invoking the court's Article III jurisdiction.
Okay. Other circuits, though, have taken the position that if one party has standing, it doesn't matter if the intervener has standing, and if that party drops out of the case, then they'll have to reexamine whether or not the intervener has standing. But we're over that bridge. Let me ask you, though, your position is that were we to find there is standing, then the case goes back to the district court and we should not reach any of the factors under Rule 24.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court did not have an opportunity to address those factors because of its preliminary ruling on...
But the way I read the district court's decision, he did address both A and B. I mean, he went on at some length, so he has considered the factors already.
There is some sense in which the district court did consider the factors for intervention in terms of permissive intervention, but I don't believe that there's any basis in the district court's decision to say he explicitly discussed the factors for intervention as of right. Now, you can extrapolate from the fact that he said that there was going to be undue delay and prejudice here, that he also believed that this motion would be untimely. But, you know, there's no explicit statement on the face of the district court's opinion. What we believe this court would have to find to rule in Safari Club's favor on these issues is that it would have been an abuse of the court's discretion to deny permissive intervention, and that that can't be found on this record.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll give you a couple of minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to address a couple issues. First, on the plaintiff's standing, in several of the underlying cases, as we pointed out in our brief, the government did challenge the plaintiff's standing to bring those deadline lawsuits, and those issues were never resolved, as far as I can tell, by any district court or by Judge Sullivan. Again, all we're asking here is for when the service makes this decision about at the 12-month stage, that it be able to consider for these 260 species covered by the agreement, that at least be able to consider whether warranted but precluded is still the proper finding for that species. For the New England cottontail, they've been making that finding since 1998, and suddenly in 2015, it's a different decision. As far as the conservation purposes of the listing process, the service advances the idea that conservation is one of the purposes of the warranted but precluded finding, again, because it focuses stakeholders on conservation of the species.
Do you have any response to the conference report?
I think the way the whole process works, it encourages conservation so as to avoid a listing. And that's what we want to be able to argue to the agency when they invite comments. In their notice of the review, they say, we will accept information on any of the species in the candidate notice of review at any time. So they're seeking input. And also, the service seems to be saying that they can go far beyond the pleadings of the cases before them because they have this system that's not working great right now. But if they want to reform their ESA listing process, they should look to their own administrative processes, or they should look to Congress, who arguably created the problem by imposing such obligations on the service. And they shouldn't look to secret negotiations with two parties being approved by a district court.
All right, thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you.